Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us, screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and ask your question. You can even bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. You can ask questions about fuel mileage, tires, engine, EGR, aerodynamics, truck specking, maintenance, taxes, financial planning, getting started as an owner-operator, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember to talk to Kevin. Press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your call. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa's here screening the calls. If you're listening to us online, you might want to pick up the phone and join in the live call, 347-884-8327 is the number. We're going to do a recorded hour tonight, so anything goes, questions and answers, great chance for you to get in. I'll tell you now, if you've got a question, a comment, a topic, whatever it might be, press 1 on your phone, get it in early. What tends to happen is we start off slow with questions, and then towards the end, we get a bunch of them, and I'm not able to get to them all, so get your questions in early. Press 1 on your phone. Lisa will screen your call, and we will get to those here in just a minute. Again, we're going to do a recorded hour for the SiriusXM live show, and if you want to join us, if you're listening online, dial 347-884-8327. Let's go ahead and get started. Good evening and welcome to the show. I'm Kevin Rutherford and this is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. I'm here tonight and every night to improve your bottom line and make you more successful. We talk about the things that are important to you, your business, your money, your life, and your success. Thanks for joining me, allowing me to ride along with you for an hour tonight. I consider it my mission on this show to bring you the very latest information to help you be more successful, make more money, save more money, and avoid scams and ripoffs. We can talk about trucks, money, retirement accounts, fuel mileage, maintenance, health insurance, technology, taxes, financial planning, current events, politics, or anything else you'd like to bring to the show. The website is letstruck.com. And you know what? Let's just get right to some phone calls tonight. Let's go to Steve in Tennessee. Welcome to the program.
It's good to be here today, Kevin.
Well, great to have you here. What's on your mind?
Well, you had a really good discussion question today about a minimum freight rate. And I was curious, how would you set a minimum freight rate? What would you base it on? And then
Well, you know, one of the things that's difficult for me when, and I'd like to do more of this. I'd like to put up a question and, you know, maybe a poll to go along with the question and then get discussion going. And it's hard for me not to just jump right in and give my opinion. But I don't like to do that because I think that it would change, you know, answers. So, and it's probably never going to work because my opinion comes out anyway. I am absolutely against a minimum freight rate. Would never even think about having one. I put the question up hoping I could get some response to people who think there should be a minimum freight rate.
Yeah, it would be nice to have one, but I couldn't see how it could be done. There's no way.
Well, wait a minute. See, and this is why I like the discussion, because my guess is you have not thought this through. Here's why. Let me give you the first reason why I would never want a minimum freight rate. Well, I'll give you one that's just philosophical, and then I'll give you one that's really practical. We are a country based on a free market. It's what made us so great. Set rates are absolutely anti-free market. So that's my philosophical reason. There's no way I would want the government telling us what a rate has to be. It's my business. I should be able to charge anything I want. Now, let's get down to the practical part of it, though. Whether you believe the philosophy or not, if we were to set a minimum freight rate, my guess is somebody would want that freight rate to be enough so that you make money, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, now if we do that, here's what we've done. And I know people have a hard time with this concept. We have just driven the rates down, not up. Here's what's going to happen. Right now, somebody getting into the business that doesn't understand their costs, doesn't know how to run a business, they can pull freight for anything they want, right?
Yeah.
What happens if they pull freight too cheap?
They either go out of business or rack up a lot of debt.
And eventually go out of business, right? Because you can only manage debt for so long. So there's the key point. If they haul freight too cheap, they will go out of business. Now, if we put this minimum freight rate in place, guess what we just did?
Well, you lowered the freight rate for the really good paying freight, for one thing.
Yeah, we kept that the person who shouldn't be in business in the first place. Hey, I have no problem with them giving it a shot. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with failing. And maybe they'll come back next time and be better for it. So I have no problem with them getting into the business and trying. But what we've done is we've artificially kept them in business because we've guaranteed them enough money to keep them in business. Well, now he doesn't go out of business. There's going to be 100 other people who decide they want to be in the trucking business because, look, it's guaranteed money. You can't fail. So now we have trucks everywhere. Our minimum rate now becomes our rate. There's too many trucks. The rates get driven right down to the minimum. That's what everybody hauls for. Now what you've done is you've punished the most efficient, successful people, and you've given a crutch and a handicap to the people who shouldn't be in business at all.
Well, kind of like the expediter market when they first started expediting, the freight was really great. And then everybody and their brother went and bought an expediting truck, and then the freight dropped. Freight rate dropped.
Yeah, now see, at least the free market will fix its own problem. The rate will drop, the people who can't stay in business will go out of business, and that rate will come back up and find its own place where it belongs based on supply and demand. So that's okay, and you're right, that's a great example, but in a free market it's able to fix itself. The rate may not be where some people think it should be, but it's exactly where it should be, based on supply and demand. But if you put that minimum rate in place, now there is no way for it to adjust back up because everybody will stay in business. You've driven the rates down. We've done exactly the opposite of what we wanted to do.
Well, that's true. I asked a friend of mine today, I said, what's the minimum rate should be? He said $2 a mile. I said, heck, I could make money at $2 a mile not knowing much about the industry.
That would be the problem right there. Now, if freight rates were $2 a mile, guaranteed, can't charge any less, everybody has to get $2 a mile, how many people do you think are going to go out and buy trucks?
I would say a whole bunch of people.
And then what's going to happen? Because there's not going to be any more freight tomorrow, but now all of a sudden there's a whole bunch more trucks. So sure, freight's $2 a mile, but who's going to have any?
No, there'll be a lot of trucks set, and a lot of people are still going broke.
The free market works, and it works, and it's worked for centuries for us, and it's made us a very successful country, and we We can't forget that. And then you brought up another point. And, you know, this would be another argument that I would make to somebody, but where do we even begin? Who gets to decide what the rate is? And can there be just one rate? Of course not. Short haul, is that minimum rate going to be good if there it's only a 75-mile haul? What if it's a, you know, 4,000-mile haul? Should the rate be the minimum be the same? What if it's LTL? What if it's flatbed or tanker or reefer or specialized or now what?
Oh, yeah, or round trip.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, where does it end?
And just go on and on and on. And then what, a guy's got a $2,500 truck payment, but then another guy's got his truck paid off.
Yeah, I mean, and that's right. Those are all part of making good business decisions. If you can be successful with the new truck and a high payment, then you should do it. If you would rather not have that high truck payment and you want to pull at a lower rate, you should be allowed to do that too. And while we're at it, while we're talking about this minimum rate, who, in order to have this minimum rate, it would have to be legislated, it would have to become law. Who are we going to trust and enforce, to write and enforce this law? Is this something we want the government doing?
Heck no, they can't do the taxes and everybody
exactly.
They got their fingers in, they mess up.
Exactly. But that's the only way it can be done. The industry can't do it. That's called price fixing. It's illegal.
Yeah. There's no really good answer except just let the market do what it's been doing so far.
That is the perfect answer, really. And I that's why I think when you said it would be nice to have one, most people haven't thought it through. And when you do, and that's why I like to start those kind of discussions. We get talking about it, you get to think it through, we educate people, and you start to see why, on the surface, sounds like a great thing. Doesn't always work. Let's see. You know what? I am coming up on a break, so I'm going to take us through the break, and when we come back, we've got lots more calls, so stick around. Check out the website. It's letstruck.com. And it's that time of year again. We'll be talking about it here in a little bit, but give you a heads up. It's Christmas, and the Let's Truck Christmas group is busy trying to accomplish what they've been very good at in the last couple of years, raising money and helping families in the trucking industry. Every year they get better, and it gets bigger, and they help more families, and it's a wonderful thing. They need two things from you. They need your money and support, but you're going to get a lot of value. You can go to the store. You can buy things from the store, and all the proceeds will go to the group. You can auction. You can join some auctions on some items and get some really great deals. And, again, the proceeds go to the group. They also need nominations for families. Go to the website to get more information. It's easy to remember. It's letstruckchristmas.com. Stick around. We'll be right back. You're on the Road Dog, Sirius 147, XM 171. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Good evening. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Trucking Business and Beyond. We're going to get right back to the phone calls. Let's go to Georgia. Matt, welcome to the program.
Well, good evening, Kevin, and Merry Christmas.
Well, Merry Christmas. What's on your mind this evening?
I'm calling to promote our Christmas group that you were just talking about. And if everybody will get a pen ready, I'll have a phone number here in a minute. But, yeah, the nominations are coming in, and, you know, with the economy and some things the way they are, there's looks like quite a need this year. So there's been a lot of activity on the website and a lot of things moving through the store.
Good.
So it looks like it's going to be a real active year.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear that. So everybody's got their pens poised and waiting. What's the number they can call?
The number they can call, and someone is answering the phone right now, and through most of the evening, phone number is 402-802-9930.
Now, the members of the group kind of rotate through the responsibility of taking those calls, correct?
That's correct. This is a recorded show. I'm not sure who's answering the phone right now, but I believe this will be live on the radio on Tuesday night. It's very possible I'll be answering the phone because I'll be at home.
Yeah, could, could be. And what I wanted to point out was that this group is made up of people in the industry who work full-time. They're busy. It's the holidays. They're just as busy as everybody else, and yet they're taking their time out, and they put in a lot of hours, you included, into this group, answering phones, shipping things out, talking to people, working with the sponsors, getting the sponsors to donate their items. And it really is an amazing thing, and I don't think most people realize all the work that goes into it by the group behind the scenes.
Oh, yeah. We do conference calls and get together, and I mean, it's... There's a few hours put into it, and that's the thing about with the sponsors, you know, the activity on the store, that's at the letstruckchristmas.com, it's constantly changing. So, I mean, if you look this week and maybe go back and look again next week, because we're still talking to sponsors and adding new things, and some things are selling out, but, so, you know, go back and look a second time a few days later.
Yeah, and that's the one thing I want to let people know is that these items that are for sale have been donated by the sponsors, and some things are very limited. I know we talked last night that the OPS that was donated was already sold, and while we were on the call, already donated another OPS, and I understand it's already been sold as well. So if you see something in the store, the prices are really hard to beat, and the money's going to a good cause. But if you see something in there you like, you better jump on it because a lot of that stuff won't last.
Yep. And, yeah, like you say, there's that same website. There's a link right on there to nominate somebody. It's a little form to fill out. And if you know of a family that needs some help this Christmas, that's what it's all about.
And the one criteria for a family that you want to nominate is they have to be involved in the trucking industry.
Yeah, this is... all about our group here with the trucking industry helping other people in the trucking industry.
Fantastic. Matt, I really appreciate all the work and time you and the group put into this, and thanks for coming on and updating us.
We'll talk again soon.
All right, thanks. Let's go to Tennessee. Jimmy, welcome to the program.
Jimmy the Truck Man, check it in.
Hey there.
I challenge the Fockers to donate as much money as I donated to the Christmas group last year.
How much?
$500.
And we appreciated it. It helped out, did some amazing things, and I love when people come on and challenge because it gets other people thinking and they step up to the plate, and that's the whole point here. To help as many families as we can.
Well, I know we helped out a bunch of those Aero drivers last year, and that was really a blessing to a lot of guys that were stranded out in the middle of nowhere last year.
Absolutely. It was pretty incredible timing, and I just believe that, you know, some things work out for reasons we'll never understand. And the Christmas group was just kind of wrapping up, you know, from working and working with families, and we had a lot of donations come in towards the end. and they had some money there, and then the whole Aero thing transpired, and boy, I tell you, I know the group was tired after all the time they had put in leading up to Christmas, but I know that they spent hours on the phone. They were up in the middle of the night. They were scrambling to get tickets and get people home, and it was an amazing thing to watch.
Exactly. I got a couple questions regarding taxes.
Okay.
And I know you've got some experience with that. One is, suppose somebody set up a retirement account, but then they couldn't use the IRA. They couldn't use it because of their because of how their tax return turned out. What happens going forward, you know, when you try to change that retirement account back to a regular stock market account?
Depending on what type of account it is, and this is, you know, one of the problems with our tax system, it's so complicated. We have
fair tax now.
Yeah. We have IRAs, SEP IRAs, Roth IRAs, KEOs, 401Ks, individual 401Ks, 403Bs. I mean, I could go on and on and on about all the different kinds of retirement accounts we have, and they have different rules. So we would have to look specifically, but most of the time, let me just say in general, if you have received some sort of tax advantage up to this point, at the very least, you're going to have to pay the tax on the money that's never been paid, and it's very possible you're going to get hit with a big penalty as well
okay.
to convert it over to a non-retirement account.
Okay, so say you set up a tax, an IRA account, so that you can get a tax advantage, and you plunk some money in there, and then you never utilize that tax advantage, and then you relabel the account to a regular stock market account.
Oh, there was no money ever put in?
There was money put in. It was labeled as a tax advantage account, but
okay.
the tax advantage was never utilized.
Because there was no income?
Because there was no income.
Yeah, I would actually have to go back and read through. We're talking about a traditional IRA, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, it's such an unusual case because it's so hard to get money into the account. If the tax return was done properly, you really can't make contributions without income.
Right.
So if there was income, there was taxes. And let me say this. Whether or not the advantage worked, if it went into a traditional IRA, you are going to be taxed and penalized when it comes out.
Okay.
Now, and the reason I remember that is because one of the strategies we use when we pay our children, it's one of the few ways I know in this country we can absolutely beat the tax system is we could pay a child, and let's say we paid them $4,000 a year. They pay no tax on it. We don't have to pay employment taxes on our own children when they're under 18. So there are no employment taxes. On $4,000 worth of income, there'd be no income taxes. They're under the limit. Because they have $4,000 worth of income, they could put the $4,000 into a Roth IRA. No sense in putting it into a regular because we have no tax to offset anyway. Put it into a Roth, no tax paid today. That $4,000 could become $4 million if we did everything right, and it would all be tax-free.
Right. Another question. Say somebody owns a truck and they drive around with a second seat driver. Would that second seat driver need to be an employee, or could they establish a partnership agreement and avoid the withholding tax.
Let me, I've got to get to a break, but that is a very good question with an important answer, and I need a couple more details. So hold that thought. We're going to come back to it right after the break. Stick around. You're on the Road Dog, Sirius 147, XM 171. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Good evening. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Trucking Business and Beyond. Before the break, I was talking with Jimmy, and Jimmy, I think I know where we're going with this, but I may need another detail or two. But if we've got that second seat, where we've got a second driver, they technically should be an employee. Many, many people will treat them as an independent contractor. That's wrong. I don't like to see that done. We could make them a partner, and we would want to be very careful about the legalities and how we did this. Are you asking for your own purpose? Because I know you have multiple trucks and multiple business interests.
Yeah, I'm asking for my own situation. My girlfriend's
okay.
In truck driving school, and she would become a second seat driver for a minimum of 2 months. She could technically be in the process of being trained as a third-party leased contractor.
Oh, got it. Okay. Now, here's what we would want to do. First of all, we don't want to use a partnership because the liability is outrageous. And we would just rather stay away from that. This is one of the places where I would actually recommend an S-Corp. I would make that one truck its own S-Corp, and you two could be shareholders in that corporation. That way, we don't have the liability issues. We separate that one truck from all the other trucks, so there's no, you know, mixing of ownership on everything. It would just be that one truck. Now, technically, the owners of a corporation should pull salaries. So we're almost back to the payroll tax thing again. You could use an LLC. Yeah, now that I thought that through, let me say that again. We would use an LLC and tax it as a partnership. The LLC would get us around all the liability issues. The partnership would get us around all the tax issues.
LLC and tax it as a partnership.
Yes.
Okay, going back to the first question, it was a SEP, IRA SEP.
Same thing. Same thing. Even though no tax advantage was taken, the money is going to be taxed when it comes out.
To my financial advisor and or my accountant that gave me the advice?
Yes, and they really were negligent here. What should happen is at the time the tax return was done, because there was no tax advantage, that money should have been put in a Roth. And now, had it been put in a Roth, it would have been able to come back out tax.
Money should have been put into more trucks.
Well, yeah, that too. But if we wanted it in a retirement account, or if even if, you know, sometimes we could say, well, we didn't know we weren't going to be able to get a tax advantage by the end of the year, but we put it into a retirement account, but there still would have been time to reclassify the money into a Roth. They give us a little leeway there, and that should have been the advice by the tax preparer working in conjunction with the financial planner saying, look, we put this money into a tax-deferred account, but there's no tax to defer, so let's either take it out now while we can, or let's put it into a Roth so that the tax advantage will be at the end. And had you done that, you could have taken it out tax-free now, but you can't because it's a sub.
And avoided a $12,000 tax assessment.
Yeah, exactly.
God damn it.
Yeah, and see,
fair tax
this
now.
Is, yeah, fair tax now, absolutely. The system is way too complicated. Way too complicated. In fact, as I'm saying all those things, there could be details where I might be missing something and I could be wrong. I don't think so, but it's a complicated system, and I would really have to see all the details because there are so many factors that could play into that. Let's go to Indiana. Carrie, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Merry Christmas.
You and Merry Lisa. Christmas. What's on your mind tonight?
Oh, well, I was reminded of a conversation we had last year where you asked me a question, and I didn't have an answer for it. I'm here to challenge all my liberal buddies to match my contribution to the Christmas Club. What was your question?
Okay.
What was your question?
Yeah, what was my question?
Do you have any liberal buddies? Tonight I have an answer. Yes,
okay.
I have some liberal buddies.
Okay.
This year I'm more involved in the club. Last year I wasn't, so I couldn't really tell if anybody took my challenge or not. This year Santa Claus is watching, and he's checking that list. I know my liberal buddies don't like to spend their money and not get anything in return. So they can go to the store at letstruckchristmas.com and they can bid on attendance to a boot camp. They can bid on a seat at one of your CMCs. They can bid on a free alignment. And those bids are only $10, $15 for your CMC. Surely they can get some value out of that.
And all of that money, no matter how much they raise, all of it goes to the group.
Yep, all of it goes to the group, and we are going to do some fantastic things with that money. There's families that need help out there, and we're going to come together, and we're going to give them a Merry Christmas.
It is an amazing group, and since it's such a wonderful cause, and a lot of people do come together and put a lot of work in, and the sponsors come together, and the people who donate come together. And I will set aside all my liberal comments for the moment.
Well, like I said, I got some liberal buddies, and I'm going to be looking for their names on that list.
Good.
Yeah. I got a little deal with a DPF filter. Did you know that those were supposed to be changed out at 250,000 miles?
Well, see, there's a lot of argument about that in the industry. All the way back in 2007 when they announced how they were going to handle the new emissions and they explained how this DPF filter was going to work, and there's three stages. You've got the passive regeneration. When that no longer can fix the problem, you have the active regeneration. When it gets to the point where that can no longer fix the problem, we have a manual cleaning process, meaning the filter has to come off the truck, the DPF has to come off. There are machines that are designed to clean it. And there were several questions I started asking the manufacturers that year. First of all, how often are we going to have to pull it off the truck? And they said, there's no way to know. There's no set number. It has to do with idling and fuel quality and all these factors. And then I said, how much is it going to cost? How long is it going to take? You know, because it's a fairly long cleaning process. And they said, oh, we already have a commitment from the OEM service shops that they will have DPFs in stock and it will be an exchange program. Well, none of those things have worked the way they were supposed to.
Oh, well, I was stuck for, I broke down all day Wednesday. I was breaking down constantly. And they kept sending mechanics out, and I kept telling my breakdown service, you better send a doser valve or something with them, or I'm not going to get fixed, you know.
Right.
I broke down three times. Three mechanics came out. They couldn't figure it out. One of the mechanics said the computer said I had a urea injection problem. My truck don't have urea. It's 2009.
Well, that's the problem.
Right.
Somebody forgot to put it on.
Right, right. I finally broke down for good and had to get towed. I sat for 6 hours waiting on a tow truck.
This is just the beginning. I've talked to people that have said that when that DPF goes bad, nobody has one. And they're not cleaning them, or if they do clean them, it's taking sometimes days to get it done and get it back on the truck.
Yeah, I ain't got my truck back yet. That was Wednesday. This is Friday. They say they're not going to have it done Monday, so I don't know how long I'm going to have to be driving another truck.
I'm not surprised. Hey, thanks for the challenge. I've got to get to a break. We've got one more segment coming up. Stick around. We'll be right back. You're on the Road Dog, Sirius 147, XM 171. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, we've got one more segment to do here. I've got a couple questions, but we've got room for another question or two. So now's your chance. If you're on the call, you've got a question, a comment, a topic, whatever it might be, I'll have time to get to one or two more than what we've got lined up right now. So press one on your phone right now. Lisa will screen that call, and we'll get to it during this segment. Here we go. Good evening. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Trucking Business and Beyond. We're down to the final segment of the program, so we're going to get right back to the calls. Let's go to Illinois. Scott, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How are you doing tonight?
Doing good. What can I help you with?
I've got a question on rolling resistance. If I'm looking at buying a tire that's got 120, 122, whatever, and then compared to a tire that is a 110 or 111 or even 100, what's the difference savings that I'm going to see in just those 10 points or the 20 points? Have you ever calculated anything like that?
Not that close just on the drive tires, but have you been to Michelin's site with the calculator on it?
Oh, yeah, you bet. Yeah, I know
okay.
All that. My question is, I'm looking at a tire that's got a rolling resistance of 119, and then, you know, I'm looking at buying that tire, and then I'm looking at, well, maybe I can get a better deal on the 720s, you know, the Bridgestones, and it's got, you know, 8-9 points difference, better. So I'm just wondering if there's a huge savings there from just having a 10-point swing or not.
Not a huge savings, no. No, on a 10-point swing, there is a savings. I don't happen to know off the top of my head what it would be. I would run it through the calculator. My goal has always been knowing how important rolling resistance is and knowing how long does a set of drive tires typically last you?
About 300,000 miles.
Yeah, so we're talking 2.5 years.
Yeah.
So even if it's a small difference over 2.5 years, I always try to get the lowest number I can get.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I'm just wondering, from a $2,000, you know, if I can save $500-$600 for, you know, the higher number, is it worth it in the long haul? Probably
no.
Be worth it. No.
Let's just look at a 1 year period, because a lot of times I do my calculations on 1 year. And let's look at something that we wouldn't even be able to measure, but we know that it exists. Let's just say, and I don't know this, but let's just say that 10 points only improves us not even 0.1 mile per gallon. But let's say it only improves us 0.5 mile per gallon, which we can't measure, but we know that
right.
It exists. We know rolling resistance works. And if it's 0.5 in 1 year, that's $500 in fuel cost. So in 2.5, even at a point where we can't measure it because it's so small, in 2.5 years, it's still, you know, $1,250. Now, if it's 1/10, you know, now it's, you know, $2,500.
Right.
You know, 0.1, all of a sudden it's $4,000. I mean, it starts to get crazy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, for me, that number's been proven enough times to me that when I'm looking at tires, I really only have one criteria. Price for me is not a criteria. The great thing about running your business successfully is that we don't have to make those hard decisions. We don't have to look at something and go, wow, I know it's better, but I really can't afford it this time. And I understand being in that position. I've been there before. But for me now, there is only one criteria really when I buy a tire. What's the rolling resistance and can I get a lower number? It's why my trucks now all have XDA energies, because the rolling resistance is 86.
And what's the tire in the dual tire? That's the XD.
I should have been more clear. I use the X1, which designates the wide single. X1 XDA energy, which is the one I use at 86 for the rolling resistance. The dual tire is just XDA energy, doesn't have the X1 in front of it, and the rolling resistance on that is 99.
Okay, XDA energy, got it.
Yep. Yeah, go for, spend a little extra if you have to, go for the lower number. Let's go to Indiana. Daryl, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I was questioning about the X1 tires. I've got the XTE on my trailer.
Okay.
I heard you talking one time. I caught the end of it when I caught your show, talking about XTAs.
Right.
XTA energy, is that a better tire than the?
The rolling resistance on the X1 XTA trailer tire is 73.
And that's better than the XTE.
Yeah, the XTE, there are actually a couple different models of the XTE, but I think the rolling resistance on those is actually in the 90s.
All right. And they're probably about the same price in the same range then?
Yeah, they are the same price. The XTA has got a more shallow tread depth when you get them new. So you may not get as many miles out of them, but they more than make up for that in the savings. Let's go to Minnesota. Mark, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, how you doing tonight?
Doing good. What can I help you with?
I want one of those glider kits that I saw you driving the other day, but I was wondering, in 2014, are they going to come up with something where we can still keep driving those, or what's the deal?
Do you go to California?
Yeah, I get out there a couple times a month.
Okay. California is the only place that it is even a concern. 2014, the rest of the country, not a problem anywhere. There's nothing on the books. We can run any truck we want anywhere else in the country. The 2014 date is going to change in California. We just don't know what it's going to change to yet. They keep telling us they're going to let us know. So that 2014 is going to get pushed back. By then, we're going to have some sort of retrofit for these trucks. Or the other possibility is we get to 2014, and, you know, if you bought the truck any time within the next year, you still have plenty of time to make a bunch of money with it. And there's a Fitzgerald has created a great aftermarket, a secondary market for those kits. If you needed to get rid of it, you'd be able to. But I don't think anybody's going to have to get rid of them. There's going to be a solution, and I don't think we're looking at 2014 anymore. I think it's going to get moved out beyond that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I love those trucks. I were down there a few weeks ago, and I got to see them, and I sure wouldn't mind having one.
Isn't it? It's just amazing, isn't it? You get to climb up into a new 2011 cab. Smells new. Everything's nice. And then you open the hood, and there's that Detroit V-Deck 4 sitting there, so clean, so easy to get to, no emissions. It's just a wonderful thing.
Yeah, I like the way they painted them up and just had all the wires just wrapped up so nice and neat, and it's pretty nice to get to see that.
It's amazing that that truck being built from a glider, you could set it head-to-head to a new Freightliner Coronado, and I can point out 20 ways that that glider is so much better than a new truck. They do a wonderful job when they build them.
Yes, they do. I'm going to have me some white letter tires on my Bridgestone, so you'll know me when you see me.
There you go.
Thanks a lot, Kevin.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's squeeze in another quick one here. Let's go to Texas. Mose, welcome to the program.
Hey there, Kevin.
Hey there.
How you doing? I have
doing
a question
good.
About winter fronts. I have a 500 Acer Cat. And right now when it's cold, the highest the temperature goes on it is about 180. And should I invest in a winter front to get it up a little higher, or it won't affect the performance?
You know what? We talked about this last winter, and I asked a bunch of people to try it because I just don't know. We don't need winter fronts anymore. We used to do it just so we could get some heat in the truck.
I don't see any trucks going down the road anymore with winter fronts at all.
Yeah, so the reason we used to do it was because you would freeze to death if you didn't put one on. And with the new electronic engines, and they run so hot, the heater systems are so much better. We don't need them for heat, but we started talking last winter, if we could keep that temperature up, every 10 degrees warmer we can run the engine, we pick up 1% in fuel economy. So I asked
to run them
last winter and tell me what happened, and I never really got any feedback from anybody. So maybe this winter we'll get some people to test that theory, see if we can get those engine temperatures up where they should be. Thanks for joining me. We're all out of time. Stick around. Jonesy's coming up next with the all-night truck stop. You're on the Road Dog Sirius 147, XM 171. Remember, be safe, be profitable, be responsible, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.